Good morning. Good to see everybody out this morning. Brother Pugh had the Bible reading, and they are both ill. And so the Bible reading for this morning's lesson will be from Amos chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. Woe to those who are at ease in Zion and to those who feel secure in the mountain of Samaria, the distinguished men of the foremost nations to whom the house of Israel comes. Go over to Calneh and look, and go from there to Hamath the Great. Then go down to Gath of the Philistines. Are they better than these kingdoms? Or is their territory greater than yours? Do you put off the day of calamity, and would you bring near the seat of violence? Last Sunday morning, we looked at the first two sections of the third and final sermon of Amos that is recorded in Amos chapter 5 and 6. And as we said last Sunday, we will devote this lesson to looking at that third part, of the sermon, which takes up the entire sixth chapter of the book of Amos. This chapter is composed entirely of Amos's pronouncement of woe upon the sinful nation of Israel. And the word woe really describes the impact of the calamities that Amos has predicted in his prophecy that God is going to bring upon them in judgment. One of the interesting things just to note in this sixth chapter is that Amos, while his ministry is primarily to the northern kingdom, he extends the application of these woes to both Israel and Judah. And what that indicates is that while Israel is his primary target, they are the subject of his prophecy, the leaders of Judah need to hear this warning because they are on a path that will take them to be ultimately in the same place that the nation of Israel has already become. And so I want to make three observations about this before I actually start looking at the woes. The woes are directed to both those in Israel and Judah who feel comfortable in their current condition. And Amos points out, secondly, that they have no reason to feel comfortable. He calls attention to the fact that if they would just look around them, they would already notice that their neighboring nations, have already fallen to the Assyrian invasion. And the third thing is that he points out to them that ignoring all this is simply trying to ignore the inevitable. The threat of the Assyrian expansion was real to both the kingdom of Israel and to the kingdom of Judah, and that Assyria was going to serve as God's agent to bring about the judgment that he was bringing on Israel because of their disobedience. So with that in mind, we can simply proceed to the text itself and look at this matter of the woe that Amos pronounces upon them. First of all, he starts out, woe to those who put off the day of calamity. This was the text that we used as our Bible reading. Evidently, the leaders of Israel thought that even though prophets like Hosea and before the writing prophets, Elijah and Elisha, had come to them and rebuked them for their idolatry and the various sins which we've already talked about in this short series, that in spite of all of those things, that they really had nothing to worry about, that they were God's people, and God would protect them from the things that they were seeing happen in their neighboring nations. And so, in essence, then, they failed to recognize that the danger they saw all around them was real for them as well. And the disaster would come because their refusal to acknowledge that condition did not actually delay the impending invasion. And we can give a kind of an everyday example of this because, to my knowledge, everybody that's come here this morning has come in an automobile. And so this would be the illustration I would use. You don't look at your tires. And so your tires are worn. And because you don't notice that they're worn, doesn't mean that they won't have a blowout. When it happens, you will be shocked. But the evidence was there all along that that could happen if you would have just taken the time to notice it or recognize it for the threat that it was. Now, that was their condition about what was about to happen to them. The Assyrian army has been expanding the borders of the Assyrian kingdom. They've already conquered nations on all sides of them. And yet, even though the prophets had warned them, they did not think that that could happen to them. The second woe that he pronounces, and we'll see how these kind of progress and build upon each other, is he says, "Woe unto those who are affluent." This is Amos chapter 6, beginning in verse 4. "Woe to those who recline on beds of ivory and sprawl on their couches and eat lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall, who improvise to the sounds of the harp and like David have composed songs for themselves, who drink wine from sacrificial bowls while they anoint themselves with the finest of oils, yet they have not grieved over the ruin of Joseph. Therefore they will go into exile at the head of the exiles, and the sprawler's banqueting will pass away." Affluence was one of the major problems that Amos had to address in Israel. And often affluence deceives people into thinking that everything is well. When you are partying, you do not recognize the dangers that surround you. A biblical example of that happens in the future at the Babylonian captivity in the book of Daniel. Remember Belshazzar's feast? He was partying while Persian armies had surrounded his city. And it ultimately led to the fall of that city. And so this matter of affluence can lead to other problems arising. And Amos decries their excessive parties as an expression of their affluence that has given them a sense of independence from God. Everything is well. And they have everything that they need. And that leads to the development of another attribute. And Amos continues on to say, "Woe to those who are arrogant." Amos 6, beginning in verse 8. "The Lord God has sworn by himself, the Lord God of hosts has declared, I loathe the arrogance of Jacob and detest his citadels. Therefore, I will deliver up the city and all it contains. And it will be, if 10 men are left in one house, they will die. Then one uncle or his undertaker will lift him up to carry out his bones from the house, and he will say to the one who is in the innermost part of the house, is anyone else with you? And that one will say, no one. And then he will answer, keep quiet, for the name of the Lord is not to be mentioned. For behold, the Lord is going to command that the great house be smashed to pieces and the small houses to fragments." One of the fruits of affluence is arrogance. It is very easy for those who are enjoying wealth and prosperity and having a good time in life to assume that all of that wealth, all of that prosperity, all of those good times is the result of their efforts. I am having this kind of life because of who I am and what I have accomplished. And that results in an arrogance that also breeds self-reliance. I don't need God. Look at what I have done for myself. These are my things. I have accomplished these things. And so when prophets come to you and warn you that you're not pleasing to God, your ears are closed to that because you are sure that you have done things that have resulted in your condition. And so their time of affluence, what Amos says to them, you're going to go from being affluent to being destroyed just that quick. Their arrogance will be crushed under the weight of judgment. And then he says, woe to those who are vain. Woe to the vanities of your life. Amos chapter 6 and verse 12. Do horses run on rocks? Does one plow with them, that is rocks, with oxen? Yet you have turned justice into poison and the fruit of righteousness into wormwood. And you who rejoice in Lodabar and say, have we not by our own strength taken Karnim for ourselves? For behold, I am going to raise up a nation against you, O house of Israel, declares the Lord God of hosts. And they will afflict you from the entrance of Hamath to the brook of the Arabah. So the result of their affluence and their arrogance was a vanity. It was an empty way of living. Their lives had been built on something that had no real substance. If you remember all the way back to the beginning of this series, we talked about that this is happening at a time when their political power had been at its height. Probably their material prosperity was as great as it had ever been. And all of that had resulted in them adopting this lifestyle that was emphasizing earthly pleasure and all of the things of this world. And so Amos says, you are self-deceived. You think you have something when everything you have really amounts to nothing of real importance. And Amos demonstrates this with a Hebraism, a Hebrew way of offering a figure of speech. He uses two rhetorical questions that are based upon what is recognized as being not practical or not possible in terms of their way of life. He says, do horses run on rocks? And horses were very important to them. But you know, they would all know that if you get your horse and you get out onto a rocky area, the horse will be very careful about where it puts its hooves. It's not going to run because of how it recognizes the danger of the footholds. And even more than that, remember they had lots of fertile valleys, but they had lots of rocky hillsides. He said, you try to plow the rocks with your oxen. And the obvious answer in the mind of an Israelite would be, of course not. That would be foolish. That would be stupid. And so Amos's point here is that their affluence and their pride and vanity had given them a security, and they weren't recognizing the impracticality or the impossibility of what they were trusting. And so Amos concludes there with the declaration that judgment is in their future. God is going to raise up a nation against them. And we know that that nation is the great Assyrian Empire. And the result would be the destruction of their entire nation. If you look at the words we've read this morning, how thoroughly this destruction is expressed. The mighty houses destroyed, the little houses crushed into fragments. And so Amos brings this section of the book to a close, the three sermons, which is the second major section in the book of Amos. And in this section, he has declared that Israel's folly has made her judgment certain. Too often today, men exhibit these same foolish characteristics. They blindly believe, as Israel did, that everything is fine and there's no fear of judgment. The Bible points out to us that that is a trait that man repeats from time to time. You remember Peter saying that those in the day of Noah were eating and drinking and giving in marriage, not recognizing the preaching of Noah, not recognizing the condition that led to the destruction of the earth. That happened over and over again with God's people and their disobedience in the Old Testament. And of course, I think we can observe that we can see that today in the world in which we live, where people are so intent on this world and the things of this world that they don't realize what the consequence of that indulgence would be. So this concludes that section of Amos's sermon. God is calling the nation of Israel to account. They will face their judgment. And of course, that is a lesson that we can apply to us and the world today. There will be always a day of accounting. So this concludes the sermons, but it doesn't conclude the message of Amos. His next section of his book is a number of visions in which God gives him the visions that really confirm that what he has been preaching is so. That God is indeed going to bring those things. And so that will be the subject of the next couple of lessons in this series when it's my turn to occupy this time period. So as we mentioned, Brother Pugh had the Bible reading. He also had the sermon, and he's not. They're not going to be here today. So John, if you don't mind, would you lead us in a word of prayer, and we'll be dismissed to our Bible.